When the sun came up on May 28th in the year 585 BC, the Medes and the Lydians were still at war. They'd been at each other's throats for a long time. For more than 5 years, they'd been fighting. And it looked like there was no end in sight for their conflict. The Lydians were led at the time by King Aleite, and the Medes were led by King Cyaxares. And their two kingdoms bordered each other at the Halys River in what is modern-day Turkey. The reason this war between the Medes and Lydians had started, according to the Greek historian Herodotus, was because the Lydians were harboring some men who had committed crimes against the Medes. These men were Scythian hunters who'd been living among the Medes, and one evening they returned from a hunt empty-handed. And the king of the Medes, King Cyaxares, mocked them. So the hunters took revenge for this king's insults by apparently killing a Median child. And then the hunters fled to take refuge in Lydian territory. Well, the Medes naturally asked the Lydians to surrender these Scythian men so that justice could be administered for that terrible crime, but the Lydians refused. So the Medes and Lydians went to war. And the two kingdoms were apparently so evenly matched that neither could prevail over the other, even after more than 5 years of war. Herodotus writes, quote, "In the course of it, the Medes gained many victories over the Lydians, and the Lydians also gained many victories over the Medes. As, however, the balance had not inclined in favor of either nation, another combat took place in the sixth year." So there it is. After 5 years of war, they were locked in kind of a stalemate. And so they decided in the sixth year, which was 585 BC, that they would engage in yet another battle. Well, at this same time, there was a Greek philosopher on the scene. He was a man named Thales of Miletus. Thales is actually the first known philosopher in the Greek tradition. He lived several generations before Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. And Thales is recognized as the first individual to reject the Greek pantheon of gods and the use of mythology to try to explain the universe. Instead, he used investigation and scientific inquiry to look for predictable laws and order in the world. Thales is said to have basically introduced ancient Greece to math and astronomy, and he made profound discoveries in virtually every field he studied. Well, modern scientists are not quite sure how he did it, but sometime shortly before this big battle between the Medes and Lydians, Thales of Miletus used his knowledge of mathematics and astronomy to figure out that something astounding was going to happen at that time. So he made his prediction known, and then along came May 28th of 585 BC, and the Medes and Lydians were fighting and fighting, and it seemed like any conclusive end to their war was as far off as ever. But they just kept on fighting anyway. And then in the late afternoon, suddenly something started to change. The battlefield suddenly began to take on a strange appearance. The soldiers noticed that the quality of the light was eerie. The light seemed to scatter in a way that they'd never seen before. Then the sky started to dim a little bit, even though there were no clouds. This was a little after 6:30 p.m. local time, and the soldiers knew that they still had about 2 hours until sunset, so the darkening sky was puzzling to them. A few of them stopped fighting and backed away from the fray of the battle so they could better observe what was happening. And then another few minutes went by, and the atmosphere continued to feel more and more strange. The light just looked increasingly off, and more of the soldiers from both the Lydian and the Mede side stopped fighting with each other, set their weapons down, and just stared up at the otherworldly sky. Under the strange light, they noticed that even though it was getting darker, everything on the battlefield looked sharper and clearer, and far more unusual than they'd ever seen it. It was impossible for them to describe what they were seeing, and it had a powerful effect on their senses. Their shadows on the ground looked very thin and sharp, very contrasted. Some of them thought something was wrong with their eyes. And then they felt the temperature begin to noticeably drop. And some crickets started chirping. Birds started retreating to their nests to roost. And the wind started picking up speed. How could this be happening? Sunset wasn't supposed to happen for a long time still. But suddenly the sky was becoming deeper and deeper blue. No one was fighting anymore. They were all standing, some with their mouths opened. Some were looking around at the other men. Some were looking down at their own hands. Most were looking up at the bizarre, deep blue sky. Looking up, where the full disk of the sun had been just a few minutes earlier, and they saw now that it was just a small sliver, and it was growing smaller and smaller. Where was it going? What was happening? Some of the troops were in full panic. Looking to the west, they saw a breathtaking curtain of dull blackness rising up on the horizon. There were hints of sunset to the north and south of this mysterious curtain. To the east, the sky was still fairly bright. Some of the soldiers stole a glance at their shadows back on the ground, the shadows that were impossibly clear and thin, unlike anything they'd ever seen. The crickets and other insects by this time were at full volume, and the little sliver of sun that remained in the sky just kept getting smaller and smaller. The sky surrounding the sun became very dark. The deep blue morphed into twilight blue, and then to bluish black, and then the sun was gone. Suddenly, there were the stars and the planets revealing themselves against this otherworldly night sky. And then that curtain of black that they'd seen on the western horizon was suddenly everywhere, rising up out of the earth on all sides and filling every curve of the horizon. All 360 degrees were glowing with orange, like an impossible radiant sunset on the whole horizon. Around the edge of the moon, they saw an intense glowing that looked like the most radiant metal ring. Stunning beyond words, and then the sun's corona burst into view. Wisps like glowing silk strands, floating, stretching, and shimmering all around the totally black hole that had been cut with some cosmic scissors from the fabric of that deep blue-black firmament. The soldiers with keener eyes saw little tongues of red and pink fire dancing around the sun's edge. Every man stared up at this staggering sight, some of them weeping, some of them involuntarily bellowing and shouting and whooping. It was the most spectacular and stunning event they had ever witnessed, a total solar eclipse. And they happened to be right there in its path of totality. After exactly 3 minutes and 26 seconds, the western sky quickly brightened, the right side of the sun's black disk began to lighten, the corona dimmed, and then the sliver of sun majestically returned and began to wax larger and larger. The eclipse was ending. A few of the soldiers picked up their weapons, uneasily looking at the enemy troops they'd been fighting just a few minutes earlier. But after what they had all just experienced, that fight seemed like a lifetime ago. Their reasons for fighting seemed distant and irrelevant. The commander of the Medes wiped tears from his face and quickly consulted with some of his advisors. They all remembered that Thales of Miletus had warned them that this would happen. And he had said it would happen this very year. They laid down their weapons and began walking, in a daze, toward a group of Lydian officials. The Lydians welcomed them. They too remembered hearing the forewarning by Thales of Miletus months earlier. And like the Medes, the Lydians had been shaken by this event. History doesn't preserve the details of exactly what they thought the eclipse signified, or even the specifics of what Thales' warning was about, but the records do show us that because of the eclipse, the Medes and Lydians stopped fighting, and they signed a peace deal. So after more than 5 years of bloodshed, their war was finally over, and it was because of this eclipse. Herodotus writes, "Another combat took place in the sixth year, in the course of which, just as the battle was growing warm, day was all of a sudden changed into night. This event had been foretold by Thales of Miletus, who forewarned the Ionians of it, fixing for it the very year in which it actually took place. The Medes and Lydians, when they observed the change, ceased fighting and were alike anxious to have terms of peace agreed on." End quote. Herodotus goes on from there to explain that in order to make the peace official, the Lydian king married his daughter off to the Median king's son. And they all took a series of oaths, and then the conflict that had claimed so many lives over all those years of fighting was over. As I mentioned earlier, modern astronomers are not sure how exactly Thales of Miletus was able to predict that total solar eclipse. This was long before the science of calculating the trajectories of the sun, moon, and earth had been perfected, and there were some gaping voids in Thales' understanding of our solar system. And some dispute that he really did predict it at all. But if Herodotus, the so-called father of history, is to be believed, and if Pliny the Elder and several other writers and historians are to be believed, then somehow Thales did successfully predict this total solar eclipse, and that would make him the first known person to successfully predict one of these cosmic marvels. And with modern astronomical calculations, we're able to go back now and identify exactly when and exactly where solar eclipses in history took place. And that's how we get the date May 28th, 585 BC. We can conclusively calculate that a solar eclipse occurred in that part of Turkey on that date. And that date also aligns with the reigns of the Lydian king Aleates and the Median king Cyaxares. So everything seems to add up pretty conclusively. And the reason I wanted to share this ancient and nearly forgotten story on The Sun Also Rises today is because another total solar eclipse is on the horizon. And it is something that, if it is at all possible, you should try to experience. There are many kinds of eclipses. There are partial lunar eclipses, penumbral lunar and total lunar eclipses. Then there are planet transits and annular solar eclipses, partial solar eclipses. But the king of them all, the one that dwarfs, you might even say eclipses, all of the others by many orders of magnitude, is the total solar eclipse. That's the one for your bucket list. Solar eclipses actually occur a few times each year, but most of the time they're partial or annular. And on the rare occasions when they are total, the path of totality normally falls somewhere over the 71% of Earth's surface that is ocean, or over the Arctic or Antarctica or some, you know, remote part of Russia. So the overwhelming majority of people live and die without ever experiencing a total solar eclipse. And that's really why this upcoming total solar eclipse is so extraordinary. This eclipse is happening on April 8th in a thin path that stretches more than 2,000 miles across the United States, from the southern tip of Texas to the northern edge of Maine. And some may have the feeling that these are a somewhat common occurrence, since there was another total solar eclipse that cast its shadow on the U.S. back in 2017. But before that 2017 event, the U.S. mainland had not been darkened by one of these for almost 40 years. And if you miss the one this year, you'll have to wait more than 20 years to see another one. The next one will be August of 2044. So the eclipse on April 8th will be an astronomical event, in really every sense of the word, but only for those experiencing it from within the path of totality. That path is about 115 miles wide, and it spans across the U.S. diagonally, from Texas to Maine. And when it comes to the path of totality, close is not close enough. The importance of that cannot be overstated. The difference between experiencing the eclipse from inside that path and outside of it is immense, even if you're close to the path. To paraphrase Mark Twain, it's basically the difference between lightning and a lightning bug.
Even if the sun is 99.5%, you will not experience all the exciting things that happen when it's 100%. It is absolutely worth getting in the path of totality.
That was Mr. Stephen Coates there, an instructor of earth science at Imperial Academy here in Edmond, Oklahoma. He was kind enough to speak with the Sun Also Rises about this upcoming eclipse, and when he talks about all the exciting things that happen inside the path of totality, there are many.
Somebody inside the path of totality, they're really blessed to see a lot of things, especially if it's not cloudy. So not just daytime darkness, but also the corona, the stars in the daytime. Sometimes even animals act, and insects act strange, or they might have a different behavior than normal. It will be dark overhead, of course, if you're in the total eclipse, but the horizon will be dimly illuminated. And since location's just a few towns outside, the shadow will be in daylight. This will make for a peachy twilight enveloping the horizon. So that's just one little thing that most people haven't experienced in their whole life. You know, when the sun rises or sets, we get the light scatter, we get the nice hues, but it doesn't go all the way around the horizon.
So there it is. Those who see the eclipse from outside the umbral path will only see a partial eclipse, which is not very exciting. If they have special glasses, they'll be able to see the moon slowly moving across part of the face of the sun. But there's no culmination, no climax to the event, no fireworks. And it's not really memorable. But if you are inside the path, that's where the exciting things that Mr. Coates mentioned happen. And this April 8th eclipse will actually be at a time when the sun is approaching its solar maximum, spitting out all kinds of solar flares. So this means we can expect to see more of those otherworldly wisps around the sun. For many people, the idea of an eclipse may seem like a kind of boring science event that's really only exciting to astronomers. And if you've only ever seen a lunar one or a partial solar, then it's easy to kind of wonder what the big deal is. But those who have experienced a total solar eclipse inside the path, they know that it's a knee-buckling, awe-inspiring, jaw-dropping, mind-expanding, emotionally overwhelming, sometimes even a life-altering experience. Some who have experienced it say it's like you're suddenly on another planet, or like you've stepped into some surrealist painting. It's unlike anything you've ever experienced.
I've seen people with tears of joy running down their cheeks after a total eclipse because it's such a moving, beautiful experience.
That's Dr. Fred Espenak. He's a retired astrophysicist and a scientist emeritus at NASA, and he's one of the world's leading eclipse experts. He spoke with The Sun Also Rises before the last total solar eclipse, and he says that after the first one he ever saw in his life when he was young, he became hooked, and he started traveling all around to experience as many total solar eclipses as possible. So he's traveled to all seven continents, including Antarctica, chasing eclipses.
I just knew that one total eclipse in a lifetime was not enough. I had to see another and another and another, and it became a kind of an addiction in a way. I've been to 27 total eclipses over the past 47 years, and out of those 27, I've seen 20.
The other seven that he traveled to ended up being clouded out. So he was in the right place, but he couldn't see those eclipses. And that was actually the situation for both Mr. Coates and me back in 2017. We were in the path, but the cloud cover kept us from seeing much at all of the event. But Dr. Espenak has seen people fall to their knees weeping during eclipses. Even the unemotional stoics, he said, sometimes their eyes well up with tears during totality. He's seen people burst into prayers and become just emotionally overwhelmed, partly because witnessing an eclipse makes you see how small our problems and arguments are, and how vast and beautiful the universe is. And it can also help us see that there is law holding the intricate clockwork of our solar system and the whole universe together.
A total solar eclipse occurs when the moon passes between the sun and the earth, casting the moon's shadow on the earth. And so viewers that see this total solar eclipse, they're just simply in the moon's shadow.
And the way that shadow happens is because the sun is about 400 times larger than the moon, but the sun is also about 400 times farther away from Earth than the moon is. So size and distance cancel each other out in an astoundingly precise way. And that means the sun and moon appear to be almost exactly the same size. The moon perfectly covers the surface of the sun, but it doesn't block out the sun's outer atmosphere. And that's why the sun's corona is visible as a ring of fire around the dark disk of the moon during totality. So if you are able to get inside the path on April 8th, whether that's in Mexico or Canada or the 2,000 plus miles inside the U.S., please try to experience this event. And if you do, please make sure that you experience it safely.
If you're anywhere in the line or in the path, I should say, of this eclipse, you need the proper solar glasses. And when we say solar glasses, we don't want to confuse those with just shades or sunglasses. These are glasses that are designed for you to be able to look at the sun in the middle of the day, let's say, where it won't hurt your eyes. You'll just see the disc. So make sure if you're planning to view the eclipse that you get a pair of these solar glasses. We bought some for our science students here in preparation for the eclipse for $1.33 from somewhere. So they're not expensive at this point, but supplies are going to run out as it gets closer. So I would encourage you to buy some type of solar glasses soon. You can also, if you're unable to get the solar glasses, you could take a box. Some people have seen this. There's means on the internet for you to learn how to do this. You could take a box, put a little hole in it, let the sunlight come through the hole, and then project that onto another box or maybe the sidewalk, and you will also then be able to safely view the eclipse. I do want to stress you never want to look directly at the sun in any way with the naked eye. And so if you're not 100% eclipsed or if you're not in the total eclipse, make sure you don't look at the sun. Even if it's 99%, it could damage your eyes.
So there you go. During the 4 minutes and 28 seconds of totality, you can lose the solar glasses and behold the glory of this phenomenon with the naked eye. But during the partial phases, before and after that totality, you have to have specially tinted filters that protect your eyes. Also, if you're anywhere near the path of totality, you might check in with your local library, since many of them are giving away glasses for free to help people safely view the eclipse. Okay, before we wrap up the episode, just as one final bit of persuasion, I wanted to play a short clip here of a crowd reacting to a solar eclipse that darkened the earth in Svalbard, Norway, back on March 20th of 2015.
It's starting to darken. 30 seconds, they say. Wow. We should see the beating soon. Oh my, there it goes. There it goes.
Oh man. There it...
Hey. Oh my. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Oh, look at that.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, do you believe that's the sun?
Oh, look.
Oh, look at the flares, the plumes. The plumes.
Oh, wow. Look at those flares. That's amazing.
Amazing.
Oh, look.
What?
Just look at it. Oh, my God.
That is so cool. That is so cool.
Oh, it's dark.
Look how dark it is. It's like darker than twilight. Darker than twilight.
My camera's not working. Look at it.
Oh. Oh. I guess.
Oh,
We saw it. We made it. Oh no, really?
Look at the horizon. Yeah. Look at the horizon.
Yeah, it's all the horizon.
Look over there.
Oh.
I have no idea where.
And look, there's Venus.
Or is it Mars? Okay. Oh, now I'm beginning to see beating again, aren't I? Oh,
good. Yeah, there's the diamond ring again.
You're not still looking at it, are you?
I stopped.
Yeah.
And then now look. Oh,
wow. Oh, look at the crowd. Look at the shadows. They're so cool.
You can hear there just how impacting it is to be able to witness the precise mechanics and the clockwork that the Creator built into our solar system. So if you're able to experience this total solar eclipse, it will be well worth the time and effort required for you to get inside that umbral path. Throughout history, many civilizations were often terrified of total solar eclipses. The Vikings believed a solar eclipse was the result of some kind of sky wolf catching the sun. In ancient Vietnam, they thought it was an evil frog or toad that was eating the sun, swallowing fire. And Korean eclipse mythology centered on fire dogs that were stealing the sun away. So there was a lot of fear for all these peoples when they saw the sun that they depended on so much just disappear in the sky. But since we now have an understanding of the intricate mechanics that God built into our solar system, witnessing a solar eclipse doesn't have to inspire fear. It really can be an occasion for deep gratitude and astonishment and reverence. All over the solar system and universe, at any given time, there are planets and moons throwing their shadows onto other celestial objects, but only here on Earth, as far as anybody knows, is there anyone around to experience it when it happens. So if it is within your power to do so, I hope you'll be able to experience this April 8th total solar eclipse. I don't think we can expect this eclipse to bring an end to any wars like that one back in 585 BC did for the Lydians and Medes. But it might bring you to a deeper appreciation for the intricate machinations of our solar system, and it might help you to be more grateful for your time on this planet. So if you're able to do so, please get to the path. Thanks very much for tuning in today, and thanks very much to Mr. Stephen Coates and Dr. Fred Espenak for their time. If you have any questions or comments, our email address is tsar@kpcg.fm. And we'll leave you today with the words of author and veteran eclipse chaser, Dr. Kate Russo. Pictures do not convey the experience of totality. Nothing you read, see, or hear can prepare you for the spine-tingling, goosebump-inducing experience of the total eclipse, the eerie twilight that confuses birds and other animals, and at times humans. It's like no other experience you've ever had. It's impossible to be a passive observer. You don't simply see an eclipse, you experience it. You are immersed in it. You are completely overwhelmed by it. Many people say that the experience of totality changes their lives.